People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. A few weeks ago, I was lucky enough to go up to St. George's Cathedral for the series of lunchtime concerts there, which they call St. George's Unplugged. And the performer on that occasion was an Italian pianist called Filippo Gorini. And not only was I interested in the whole concept of a piano being played in the St. George's Cathedral because of the acoustics there, but Filippo was playing arguably one of my favorite sonatas, the piano sonata in B-flat, D960 by Schubert, his last sonata. So I was very keen to see what happened. And I have to say that I was very impressed and immediately suggested that Filippo come and talk to me because he's in Cape Town. He has been in Cape Town for a while on a very interesting project called Sonata for Seven Cities, which aims to show a new responsible and ethical approach to concert life with monthly residences in Vienna, Cape Town, Hong Kong, Portland, Milan, and more, centered around performances, outreach, teaching, and philanthropy. So that's what Filippo has been up to. Filippo, welcome to Fine Music Radio. It's good to have you here.
It's my big pleasure.
Well, I've been very complimentary about you and this piano sonata, and I just want to say a couple of things about your performance, because I think you will agree that it is a big sonata. It's an important sonata in the repertoire of sonatas, and arguably the greatest of Schubert sonatas. But having said that, it has its own challenges, hasn't it? Because it's not a great big crashing sonata like some sonatas are. The very opening is, I believe, quite tricky for the pianist. Is that true?
I mean, one of the things I love the most about Schubert's music is that I could almost sight read it, but playing it well is incredibly difficult.
Oh, that's
you spend months and months. In the case of the B-flat year, for me, it has been years of practice and thinking and working it with my mentors and teachers to try and get the overall arc of music to last the whole three quarters of an hour without feeling that it's many chunks, but one big journey to get the dynamics, the voicing of every harmony, perfect. Just the start, as you said, it's pianissimo for two pages with very delicate chords where if even one note sounds a little bit more than another, immediately we break the spell that this work should start with.
It casts a spell, doesn't it, the moment you play the first chord, let alone the phrase.
I try to make it that way. The piece should be like that.
Yeah.
You should feel like you're entering some sort of special sacred doorway that you don't know where is this leading me. And then you wander almost as if on a crest high up on a mountain suspended between this world and the next, or reality and dream. And in this journey, one harmony can suddenly show you terror or the abyss or the dreariness of life. And then suddenly, with one chord, we're back to innocence, to purity, to tenderness, to love, and sometimes to joy and to smiling. Or in the later movement, to dance.
Well, yes, the last movement especially. But that strange trill in the left hand, in the bass, is ominous, isn't it? I've always thought, why did Schubert do that? And then immediately after that, he goes back to that tranquil sound of the opening. Is that an example of what you're saying? There are these moments where a cloud passes over.
That trill is very disturbing.
Yes.
It has to be. It's totally outside of the main material of the sonata, and it comes again and again, interrupting the natural discourse of
music.
And
always quite softly.
Always quite softly, except for once, where it's in fortissimo and desperate. It's like this ominous presence that never fully manifests itself, but is there throughout the first movement.
And it's a long movement. Well, we said it's three quarters of an hour, the sonata, and when I was listening to you playing it, I was wondering, is he going to do the first movement repeat? But you did, and I think it's important to do that repeat because of what happens afterwards, so that you know the basic material so well. But it does make the movement quite long.
It does. This is something I actually disagreed with Mr. Brendel about, because he...
Mr. Alfred Brendel.
Yes. He wouldn't play this repeat. But for me, first of all, the only time that that trill comes in fortissimo is before the repeat and going back to the beginning. And it is soul-crushing and fundamental for me to play that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, because the development is so long, it has, for me, formally to be balanced by playing twice the exposition in the sonata.
Well, I'm very glad you did. I'm surprised Brendel didn't want to do that. I suppose that he had
his reasons. He made a very compelling case for it.
Yeah. You worked with Brendel, didn't you? But I think I'm going to talk to you about that a little later, because I know Brendel played a major role in your life. But just, I know we're not going to be listening to the sonata, but when people now hear what you say, when they go back to listen, they might remember, because I told you that one of the couple of the things that struck me about your performance was the pianissimo. You were able to play incredibly softly, but still get all the sound through, if that makes sense. And the silences, you made a lot of the silences, and it made you realize that silence in music is so important.
Silence is the basis on which we build music. And Schubert in this sonata uses some very strong silences that are paradoxically louder and more intense sometimes than most of the notes.
Yes. That's an interesting thing to say.
I really try to not rush through these silences and only start again the music when I feel like emotionally that silence has settled and we're ready to start again.
Mm-hmm. I also noticed that you moved very quickly into the next movement. Not too quickly. I don't mean you came in too quickly, but you kept that arc you spoke about was made stronger, I think, by moving, especially into that slow movement, relatively quickly.
For me, it's important that the sonata doesn't feel like four separate movements.
Exactly.
And so the connection between one movement and the other needs to be a musical one.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a space where people get distracted and cough and
shuffle,
relax
yes.
or whatever.
Yes.
There is musical energy in that space
as well. I absolutely agree.
And then, you know, how much space and what happens within it is very much part of the interpretation.
Yeah. And up to the pianist, as you say. And we're talking about Schubert and... Filippi, I want to just play your first piece of music that you've chosen. And you've chosen Schubert. Just tell me about this piece, An die Musik, the great recording with Schwarzkopf. And
So Schubert is one of my favorite composers, and one of the genres in which he was probably the best composer in history is Lied. It's German song.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rather simple, pure song. It's basically a prayer or dedication thanking music for showing us the heavens and hope in the times of darkness. So basically thanking music almost like it's a divinity for its presence, its spiritual uplifting presence in our life. And in this recording, with the incredibly warm, soft, but also full support coming from the piano from Edwin Fischer, who was, I think, one of the greatest pianists in history in terms of understanding of natural phrasing and harmony and tempo flow. And then Elisabeth Schwarzkopf's angelic voice that is so perfect and so natural, and where there is musical intention in every millisecond of what she does. Nothing is left to chance, but nothing is contrived. And the result is just that we are immediately transported and taken. The whole selection of about 40 minutes of Lieder that they recorded together in 1952, when you begin listening, you cannot stop this recording because you are touched from the first note to the last.
I know what you mean. Okay, let's listen.
Viel der Kreis und Strom.
the beautiful voice of Elisabeth Schwarzkopf with Edwin Fischer, and Schubert's song Andy Musik, a hymn to the glorious art of music. And it was the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, the Italian pianist that I'm talking to called Filippo Gorini. Filippo, at the beginning I said you're doing this project now, a sonata for seven cities, you in Cape Town, and one of the things you had to do was record a CD. You're recording a CD in each city.
So maybe I'll take it from the beginning.
Yes, please do.
Fundamentally, my idea for this project was to change the approach to concert life. Because after 10 years of touring around the world, where often you jump into a city, you only see your hotel room and the backstage, you play a concert, you take applause and you leave.
Yes.
I thought whenever this happens, it's a missed opportunity, both for me to engage with a community, to learn from them, to discover how they live, what is music for them, what are the beautiful things hidden in this city. And also for the people of the city, it is a missed opportunity to actually get to know me as a musician, as an artist, as a person. So I decided to try and take seriously the idea, what if I stayed for a month in a city? And so in seven cities around the world, from Vienna to Hong Kong, now I was in Cape Town, and then in Colombia, and so on, I decided to try and stay for a month and see, what do I do then if I'm for a month in a community? And the answer is, I spend time performing in important and also in minor rural towns or provincial towns, sometimes 2 or 3 hours away from the main big city, like, for example, Hermanos here. I take time to teach to the local young pianists, and a month of time with 4 or 5 students, where I teach each of them 4 or 5 lessons of 2 or 3 hours each, is a lot of time to actually make a mark in the way they play compared to a short masterclass of just one quick lesson.
Yeah.
And then a lot of time trying to bring concerts and musical education in corners of the community where usually it doesn't appear, whether it is retirement homes, whether it is hospitals, sometimes prisons, or in the case of Cape Town, we focused mostly on schools and music schools spread out throughout the Cape region, like the Kronendal Music Academy, like the Handefat Music Project, the Maziv Iron Outreach, or schools that work with kids from townships like St. Vincent's or Woodlands Primary, taking a piano where there isn't one and playing for, you know, 4 or 5 hours to different groups of kids, showing them different pieces, depending on the age, depending on how they react, but mostly just giving them something to remember, that a pianist took his time to visit, coming all the way to Italy to play this touching music for all of them.
And has it worked? Has it been a success?
For me, it was a life-changing experience so far in the 2 cities I've already done. Mm-hmm. Here in Cape Town, it was really touching. I've seen a lot of engagement from both kids and adults and public that I encountered, whether it was in the Endler Hall in Stellenbosch or when I played the Emperor in Port Elizabeth or when I went to these schools. When I played in Hermanos, all the kids and their parents and teachers that I met at Handefat Music Project in Kleinmond came to listen to my full recital, which was a 100-minute long program with a big Schubert sonata and Kreisleriana by Schumann and a contemporary piece, and they were spellbound. When I did the recording in City Hall yesterday, I invited some of the people I met during the past month to come and attend, and it was basically our private moment, and a kid from the Mazi township who really wanted for his birthday to come to my Stellenbosch recital and couldn't make it, I managed to get him to come to City Hall and listen to the final run-through that will be the basis for the CD that comes out of this project.
So the CD, what label is it on?
On Alpha Classics.
Alpha Classics. So that will be released internationally, like your other CDs. What did you record? You recorded the Schubert.
Recorded the whole program. So a new sonata that I commissioned for this project by Federico Gardella, a prominent Italian composer. Then Schumann's Kreisleriana and Schubert's B-flat sonata. It's a double CD. that will be out in more or less a year's time on Alpha Classics and digital platforms.
Okay. And now you're reaching the end of your stay in Cape Town. Where to next? Do you give yourself a break in between, or do you go straight to another city and start all over again?
I have a very short time at home with also a couple concerts in the middle. And then in less than 1 month, I will already be in Hong Kong for the next step of this project.
Okay. What I thought was interesting is the outreach work, because Cape Town has, I think you will agree in some ways because of the political background of this country, has the disadvantaged communities. I don't know if you come across that in Vienna or elsewhere, but that must have been an interesting challenge for you as well, to see poverty maybe, as well as the enthusiasm of these children who weren't able to go to concerts and all that, to be able to experience with you.
So basically the premise with which I started this side of the project is it starts from the works of music itself. I don't think this is high-level, elite, luxury entertainment for wealthy people. It is music that is about life. It's about the most precious things great men of the past have left us. All they could say that they could leave on the score. In the case of Schubert's sonata, it is his testament, basically, written weeks before his very early passing. And I don't think this should be limited to just whoever can afford it. We as artists should make every effort to make it accessible, even more to people who may be broken by whatever circumstance. And of course, here there are townships and there is a more poverty, but you can find people like that in every place in the world. I went to play at a homeless shelter in Vienna. I went to play at a psychiatric hospital. It doesn't necessarily have to do with wealth, but where there are people whose life could be changed even a little by hearing this music and they never get the chance, that's where I want to take 1 month in a city to go.
I hope you've had a good month in Cape Town, by the way, because apart from all that, you have our beautiful scenery to enjoy and reasonable weather, I think.
I had a fantastic spring weather, the beautiful mountains and oceans, the delicious food. I have to say I enjoyed every single day of my stay here.
It sounds like a brilliant project, this, I have to say, Filippo. Your next piece of music is Bach's B minor Mass, and the opening, that wonderful opening. Is there a special reason you've chosen this, apart from its greatness?
Bach is another of my favorite composers. I spent a lot of time practicing and even made a documentary about the art of fugue.
Oh.
And I think too often people, when talking about Bach, concentrate on the structural, geometrical, mathematical aspects of his music, or these days, too much on historically informed practice and basically trying to reconstruct the surface of how this music should sound, almost in at a cosmetical level, you know, of
yes.
The surface. And I think we still have a lot to learn from great masters like Carl Richter, who manages to bring to the beginning of this Kyrie astounding verticality of sound, like a pillar that reaches all the way to the heavens looking for mercy. And it's one of the greatest beginnings of any piece of music.
Thank you.
the majestic opening of the B minor mass by Bach, the Kyrie, and the conductor there, Carl Richter. And the second choice of my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio, Filippo Gorini. And we're talking about the art of music, and you mentioned the art of fugue just now. Your current project is the Sonata for Seven Cities, which we've just discussed, but I was intrigued that you had a multi-year project, the Art of Fugue Explored. How did that work, as a matter of interest?
So that started during COVID, when I finally had, by circumstance, 6 months where I didn't have performances or pressure to get anything short-term ready. And I focused for 6 months only on this huge cycle that I always admired and never had the time to properly learn.
You're talking about Bach's Art of Fugue.
Yes, yeah, indeed.
The whole thing.
And often when people talk, as I was saying earlier, about this piece, they focus on its mathematical and technical perfection in terms of virtuosic counterpoint writing. And I don't think that is what the work is about. That is just the high degree of craftsmanship that goes into it. And so I decided to make a documentary interviewing people mostly not completely related with music. A great architect like Frank Gehry, or a film director like Sokurov, the Russian film director, sculptors like Alexander Polzin, or a Lebanese writer Dominique De. People from all sorts of corners of the other sides of culture who love Bach, and ask them, basically, what do you see in this music? And what came out is a multifaceted portrait of Bach that is not so much about the technique, but the immense moving content, the deep ability to be religious, to pray, but also to express life, to express turmoil, and to sing in his music. And I think this was, for me, an inspiring journey to make, and something that has since touched a lot of viewers who have either seen the documentary on Italian television where it was aired, or on the website for this project, The Art of
Fugue. So it is available to be seen?
Yes.
The Art of the Fugue, like on YouTube, for example?
On the website of my project, The Art of Fugue Explored, a few of the episodes are available for free. The other ones is a minor charge.
Oh, that's interesting. I hope people hear, because that's a very interesting approach. As you say, I've always thought The Art of the Fugue difficult to listen to because you are so aware of the structure of the piece and you think, I need to understand why he turned this upside down and why so many numbers make up so many bars. And you don't associate it very often with just a beautiful piece of music covering all sorts of moods, which is what you're saying you've done.
I remember when talking about this with Peter Sellers, the opera director, he said, you know, a flower, you can look at a flower and say it's made of cells and they're so perfect and there's this structure and this and the geometrical and the chemical bonds and all of that. And this is all wonderful. But it's also a flower that you can just give to someone.
Exactly. Beautifully put. You mentioned a little earlier, Filippo, about Alfred Brendel. And I know you've worked with a lot of people in your long career for such a young man. I have to ask you what it was like to work with Brendel, because he's so well known. He's died. There have been the most amazing tributes.
I was lucky to, well, first of all, to discover his recordings when I was 12. And it was a big part of how I fell in love with music, especially with Schubert and Beethoven. And I managed to attend his last recital in La Scala, which included the Schubert B-flat Sonata. And I remember at that time I was practicing the Schubert Impromptu, and he played one of them as an encore, and I felt almost like he knew I was there and he played it just for me.
Really?
Just 8 years later, fate had it that I had progressed enough in my studies and won a competition, and his partner by chance attended one of my recitals and was impressed by my Diabelli variations. And she suggested to him to listen to my recording of that piece, not commercial recording. At that time, mm-hmm. it was just alive. Mm-hmm. And he did. And from that moment, he decided to dedicate to me quite a bit of his time over the years. I would mostly go to London, to his house, stay 1 or 2 days with him the whole time. And we would work in the afternoon 4 or 5 hours on 2 or 3 pieces of music.
What a wonderful experience, Filippo.
It was. It taught me a lot, especially just being in contact with such a profound musical mind and with such clear and non-compromising ideas formed over 60 years of thinking and performing at the highest level, the same works that I was attempting to learn.
Yeah.
It also was sometimes tough. He was, as I said, uncompromising and mostly dissatisfied with what I was doing, except for some times which felt like finally we did something right.
Yeah, that he liked, that he enjoyed, yeah.
But I know that I took a lot away from my time with him, especially the intensity with which he lived music and how much he asked the pianissimos to be soft, the fortissimos to be intense, the melody, the phrasing to never be loose or flaccid or flippant.
Mm-hmm.
He had these words that this is pedestrian,
yes,
or this is flippant, that were like the worst critique he could give you.
Yeah, but nonetheless, look what it's done for you, Filippo. I think let's go for another piece of music now. And you've chosen some Brendel, actually, here working with Sir Simon Rattle, Beethoven's Emperor Concerto. And you've just played it in Port Elizabeth. Did Brendel teach you something special about it, or why have you chosen his recording?
Well, I wanted to include today one of his recordings, and I think he's possibly at his best ever in concerto repertoire with Simon Rattle. They were such a fantastic match of intensity, of care, of devotion for the music, but also managing to bring to this music joy, enthusiasm, while still being somber and rigorous. This last movement is a dance. I remember playing it for Brendel and him insisting a lot to get the dance aspect, the Viennese dance aspect, much more out of it. And since I just performed it in Port Elizabeth with Daniel Boyko and the Eastern Cape Philharmonic, I thought we could dedicate a few minutes to that.
Definitely. Here's Alfred Brendel.
Thank you.
Sadly, there we fade out of Beethoven's Emperor Concerto, the third movement there, in that recording with Sir Simon Rattle conducting the Vienna Philharmonic, and the soloist was Alfred Brendel, a great influence on the life of my guest in People of Note this week, Filippo Gorini. Filippo, we've spoken quite a lot about your projects, and like Alfred Brendel, but do you come from a musical background, or where did your love for music come from?
So my parents are actually nuclear physicists. Both of them.
But far away from music, I would say.
And my older brother is a mathematician. However, my father studied the piano when he was young up to quite a high level. And that meant we had a piano at home. We had some sort of habit of listening to music, especially recordings more than concerts. But music was always present in my life. And it was very natural for both my older brother and then me to start playing the piano at five. At first, it wasn't exactly the love of my life. It was just one of many other hobbies or after-school activities that my parents organized for me. I think in middle school, around 11, 12 years old, is an age where you suddenly start to have a little bit more conscience of yourself and develop your own tastes and take more responsibility for your life. And that's when I actually fell in love with music. Something about the big sonatas by Beethoven, even at that age, touched me to a level that I thought this is something practicing a lot for. I want to be able to play this music. And I remember just at that time, I still didn't have a great teacher, but I had the Beethoven sonata scores at home, and more or less I read through all of them. Very poorly. I absolutely did not have the means to play them. But that was a strong moment for me to develop affection towards this music. After that, I entered conservatory with Maria Grazia Bellocchio in Bergamo and made my studies. And the rest is I became a pianist.
Yes, but there's a list here. I'm just going to read some of it, Filippo, of some of the venues you've played in. Famous venues: Milan's Teatro alla Scala, New York's Carnegie Hall, Amsterdam's Concertgebouw, the Berlin Concert House, Vienna Concert House, Hamburg Elbphilharmonie, London Wigmore Hall, the Zurich Tonhalle, These are famous concert halls and recital things around the world. When did your career launch you as into the role of a concert pianist?
So at 20 in 2015, I took the Beethoven competition in Bonn, and there I received the first prize. And that sort of gave me about 20 to 30 prize winner concerts in Europe, which was a great start to getting my name around. And somehow things fell into place in a very lucky way, where in those 4 months following the competition, I played this concert. I managed to impress Brendel and start working with him. I managed to get signed by an international manager. And that also led to having my first album be published a year later by a major label, the same that I'm still recording for.
And that's Alpha.
Yes. And at that point, that got things rolling. And since then, I have a stable number of concerts all around the world, and I'm also able to organize my more creative projects.
Like this one you're doing now.
Exactly.
So when you do this Sonata for Seven Cities, which you're in the midst of now, you can't accept any other arrangements, can you? Any other dates for concerts or recitals or concertos?
That's true. That's kind of the sacrifice aspect of it. But from an artistic and human point of view, every day in this project is well spent. And I don't think performing, you know, the Schubert B-flat sonata in a big hall is more important than performing it inside a hospital for patients.
Mm-hmm.
It's two different crowds, two different groups of people, but the music and the level at which I perform it, the commitment is the same.
As though you were in one of those great concert halls.
For me, it feels absolutely the same.
Yeah. And do the people respond? You said you also have played in a psychiatric hospital. Do the people respond? Do you have to put up with the possibility that someone will make a noise or do something that mustn't throw you, must keep going? Do you know what I mean?
Of course, you know, in the concert halls, we have developed the best possible setting to listen to music.
The discipline.
And I am not disavowing that.
Yeah.
Playing in a place like City Hall or recording there is fantastic. The acoustics, the level of the instruments, the behavior of people who try their best to enter in the emotional mood of the performance and not disturb other listeners. I think since this music is profound and deserves to be listened to also by people who, for whatever reason, cannot come to a concert hall, whether it's money, whether it's health, whether they're in prison and they cannot leave, I accept fully the compromises that these situations can put. And it is my offering, my gift to them, and it is up to them how they receive it and how do they experience it in the best way they can. But I have seen even little kids make big efforts to be concentrated and listen. I also try to, not so much in the playing, that remains the same, but the way I introduce pieces or what I do in the moments between one piece and another changes to keep different audiences as involved as possible.
I'm sure.
And what I've seen is people are touched by this music. Sometimes not everyone, but if even there is a single person where I play that gets something deep and moving. Yesterday when I made the recording in City Hall, I invited just a few people to come and they were so moved. Some of them even had some tears. One of the kids from Masi came all the way to City Hall to listen, and for him it was the first time going through a journey like this in music, and he said, it's like life. It has its ups and downs. But it brought me, you know, to such emotional places.
It must be great for you to have that sort of satisfaction, which is different from playing in a posh concert hall where everyone, as you say, is a sort of luxurious setting.
I strive to be equally at home in all these settings.
Yeah. Good for you.
I have nothing against people who have wealth or luxury, and many people who do come regularly to classical music concerts and concert halls truly love music and truly get a lot out of these concerts.
Yes.
So my project is not about excluding them.
No, I understand.
It's about reaching out to
absolutely.
Those who cannot make it to the
concert
hall.
I'm a great admirer of what you're doing, Filippo. Let's have some Brahms now, otherwise we're going to run out of time. And you've chosen the second piano concerto and that very exciting second movement with Maurizio Pollini as the pianist here, and Abbado. Is there a reason for this piece and for the players?
The second piano concerto by Brahms is probably my favorite piano concerto. And Pollini and Abbado, I think, are the greatest musicians in Italy from the last century. And I have been incredibly inspired by both of them, by their rigor, their extreme intensity, their involvement, also the social aspects to their project. You know, Abbado taking the project Il Sistema with the youth orchestras to Italy and to Europe from South America, and doing many other social projects. Pollini, when he was young, played in factories for workers. They had strong, pure musical and moral ideals that they stood by every second of their lives. And this has influenced me on every level.
part of the second movement of the Piano Concerto No. 2 by Brahms. Maurizio Pollini was the pianist and Claudio Abbado was the conductor. And another choice of my guest, Filippo Gorini. Filippo, just before I let you go, I saw somewhere that you also enjoy chamber music. You enjoy the whole chamber music aspect of music.
Chamber music has some of the best repertoire ever written. Trios of Beethoven, the quartets by Brahms, quintets, you know, Schumann, you know, Schubert's trios. Like, the beauty of this music is unparalleled. Also, lead repertoire with singers, yes, which I played at the beginning. I enjoy playing this and finding musicians with whom I can really feel like I'm at the same time purely myself when playing, but also listening to their voices and building something together.
Yeah, that incredible intimacy that chamber musicians always tell me they feel within a string quartet or a piano quintet or whatever.
And learning from string players and singers has changed my way of playing the piano immensely. This was also something Brendel told me very early on. Stop listening to pianists. Start listening to singers and string players.
That's very interesting. Goodness me. I'm going to have to go, Filippo, because we've run out of time. But you've got a curiosity for us as your last piece. The composer Kurtág, what are we going to hear?
So, György Kurtág is one of the most revered composers in Europe. He's turning 100 next February.
Wow.
Which will be a year where many musicians celebrate his music. And during my stay here, I realized his music isn't really known down here in South Africa. So I thought I would choose one of his little miniatures for piano, a homage to Janáček, as performed by my teacher, Maria Grazia Bellocchio. It is very dense, very express, very, in this case, tender, delicate music, which sounds at the same time modern and like nothing you might have ever listened to, but also rooted and connected to tradition and incredibly moving, expressive, not like avant-garde, more abstract music.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll end with that. Kurtág is the name of the composer. And I've been talking to Filippo Gorini on People of Note today, who's been in South Africa for a month in his Sonata for Seven Cities. I wish you well, Filippo, for your next venture in the next city. And I'm looking forward to the CD being released of Our City here in Cape Town, where I'll then have a recording of you doing the B-flat Schubert Sonata, which I really look forward to. Thank you for your time, and best of luck.
Thank you very much. I promise I'll be back in Cape Town soon.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.